Welcome to the Just Believe Show. I'm your host, Irving Mack. The show is dedicated to raising mental health awareness and preventing suicide. If you ever need any help or resources, check the show notes. And remember, I got you. If you enjoyed the conversation, please leave a review. We're stronger together and can overcome any obstacle that life presents. With that being said, enjoy the show. This is the Just Believe Show. I'm your host, Herbie Mack. Today, episode, I'm honored to sit down with Kay Haynes, and she's the founder, CEO of Crossroad Companionship. And she's an incredible life coach. Not even just life coach. She's an incredible person. The journey that she went on to learn how to heal when it comes to her obstacles in life, it's incredible. She breaks some of it down. To have that strength and courage to not only put on your own oxygen mask and realize, like, man, I have to assist others. There's people out there that is going through things that they may not need a therapist. They may need a life coach. They may need a peer, someone with lived experience that can help navigate them through this journey we call life, whether it's just life or mental health in general. And for her to sit back and realize the importance of helping others, not only in the sense of healing, but saying, hey, I'm here to support you. Hey, I have this plan for you that may work. And it's not for everyone. This is just for you, because you are unique. I enjoy our episode. I enjoyed the conversation that we had. I've learned so much off of just the hour I had with her. Plus, today's episode is going to be a little longer than normal, but I feel like it's worth it. With that being said, enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Just Believe Show. I'm your host, Herbie Mack. Today, I'm honored to have this lovely young woman to share her story, but not even her story. Her journey on, like, how she got here, how she was able to heal others. And it's so important to whatever journey that you've been through to share with others and show them, shine that light on them. And today I'm here with Kay Haynes. How are you doing?
Hello. Thank you for having me.
No problem.
Yes, my name is Kay Haynes and I am the Crossroad Companion. And what that means is I help individuals navigate what they perceive as challenging life transitions or situations or events in their life through intuitive art. And so that could be working with personal symbols. It could be creating visual art pieces. It could be journaling. It could be poetry writing. It could even be cooking. It just depends on the individual and where we feel inspired to go as I take them on that journey.
Nice.
So just tell me, how did you come up with this? What was the story behind this?
Usually when you're passionate about something, it's because of something you've been through.
Correct.
Usually that something is an opportunity for you to expand and grow, even if it's a little on the painful side. And so I experienced what I consider a dark night of the soul. And that's when, for whatever reason, it started with this veil seemed to fall upon me that dimmed my light. And from there, and I'm not really sure why it happened, but from there, I found myself not being able to rely on the spiritual practices that I grew up with, like praying and reading the Bible and those kinds of going to church. I just didn't feel that connection. And even though that connection never goes away, it's not something that you lose, but you feel like you lose it. And there was just silence. And I feel like nothing was coming through. And that happened for a period of time. And then there was a time when, after that, when all I heard, it was just incessant chatter. And it was just from the inside, the outside. There were times where I couldn't sleep at night, that I would just hear this constant chatter that wouldn't allow me to rest. And I'm not really sure how I was able to really specifically, how I was able to transition from it. I was starting grad school, a grad school program. As part of our program, you engaged in these different creative, reflective activities that involve nature. And it wasn't until I got into that program and I immersed myself in those different experiential activities that I was able to share my story with my classmates, what I was going through, and also explore what I was going through in those creative forms of expression. And that's what got me through. It was that first year of grad school where you focused on yourself that got me through.
So what I'm hearing is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't like to make assumptions as we... So what I'm hearing is during this time of grad school, you learned about self-care and how to put yourself first as far as tending to your needs.
It really was. It was like the thought process was, or the premise was, that you can't someone else if you've using these tools and using these resources, if you don't confront your own shadows, if you don't self-confront, you can't walk somebody else through that process. There, believe it or not, self-confrontation is scary because you're confronting the parts of yourself that you didn't realize were there. They're a little dark and a little scary, and that you may be a little ashamed of and embarrassed by and feel humiliated by putting light on those things. So that's your first year. So if you couldn't get through that first year of that, then
what are we doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, right. Man, that I would like to share. I was having a conversation with one of my close friends, and he was like, hey, what sparked you to really start teaching people about suicide and all of that? And I was just like, it was that conversation I had with myself. It was those moments when I was looking in the mirror, and it wasn't like I'm just looking just at your daily mentos. It was just looking at who am I, right? Why am I hurt? Okay, this person was a part of my trauma, and I have to forgive them in order to learn who I am. And in order to learn who I am, I have to forgive myself for being so hard on myself, right? There's so much things that, like, for myself, my trauma started as a child. And as an adolescent, I was still carrying it. And I was just like, man, for me to put this pressure on a kid, it's not right. I had to learn how to love myself as a child, like hug myself. I have a photo of myself in my office. And every day I look at that kid, and I'm like 3 years old. Okay. But I look at that kid and tell him he's loved. He's smart. He's intelligent, because that kid is going to turn into that man that you see today to really be able to face the world in his authentic soul. But that journey, I had to sit back and look and be like, who am I? Man, yes, I made mistakes. I'm not perfect. Show me somebody on this earth that is, and I'll shut up. But really embrace that and just be honest with myself. You know, it took years to really be comfortable in my own skin, right? You see how I dress, and people like, oh, I'm just like, yeah, this is who I am. I'm not going to change for anyone. Accept it. I don't like it. Doesn't bother me, because I love me. So I think that was very important for you to sit there. So talk about that journey of healing during this time of grad school, and you're learning who you are.
Specifically,
what was the healing? What was the first step for you?
I think the first step was getting rid of a limiting belief, the belief that was not a creative person, because that's what I use. I use art. But for me, art was being able to draw. I can't draw. Being able to create these beautiful images that were recognized, or write poetry, or I felt like I wasn't able to do that. I could sing, I could dance, I did choir, show choir and stuff like that. But yeah, I had to overcome that limiting belief and other limiting beliefs. I think that's where it started. Because if you're holding on to these limiting beliefs and you're buying into them and owning them, then you're stuck, because you're not willing to believe something different. And it really is as simple as believing something different, because thoughts are powerful. That's where our creativity comes from, it's our thoughts. And until you realize it's just that simple, then you do feel like you're stuck.
Learning how to reframe your mindset, something that I had to learn, right? It's pretty similar to you. I thought that I wasn't the brightest, I thought I wasn't the sexiest, but I had to believe, like, I am. I don't care if this person doesn't find me attractive. I don't care if this person thinks I'm an idiot. No. I feel like I'm above average when it comes to being smart, right? But learning that and being okay with that, and not only saying it out loud, but writing it, right? One of the things I did was I wrote my emotions on my mirror, mm-hmm. like the positive affirmation, mm-hmm. along with having sticky notes. Sticky notes was in the car, but actually writing on the mirror. Because when you freshen up or when I'm talking to myself and I'm looking at these words in the mirror, I'm saying it to myself. I'm writing it out loud and putting it to the universe so it can come back to me, so I can be as confident, so I can be as strong as I want to be, right? Stop having that doubt of, can I do this? Am I that bright? Because I can imagine grad school was very challenging, let alone trying to discover who you are during this time. Yeah, papers due, yeah. projects and all that. And then this time for you, you're just like, okay, I'm going to find who I am. I'm going to take on the burden of being a student. This is more important. Let me actually plant these seeds so I could be the woman that you see today. So I find that, I applaud you. I find that so inspiring. Yeah.
And I did not set out to be a crossroad companion.
So how did you get here? Can you talk about that?
Man, I think it was just part of that step-by-step, that journey going through grad school and doing the self-confrontation and shadow work. And you don't know what you're going to learn. You have one thing that you expect. You have your expectations, right? What you think is supposed to happen and where you think the journey is going to take you. But it's not until you really surrender at some point, you go, okay. Because I was supposed to be an engineer.
Okay.
And I was supposed to be an environmental engineer. Okay. Spirit literally said, this is not for you. Like, it got to the point where when I would go to class, I would get these intense stomach pains to the point where I would be doubled over in pain and I would have to excuse myself. And the further away I got from the classroom, the pain lessened. And the closer I got to the classroom, the pain would come back. There's no rhyme or reason for that other than you're not where you're supposed to be. It couldn't be any clearer. At that point, I couldn't deny.
The universe, spirit, he's telling me, hey, you're getting off track.
Stop. You got to stop.
This is not your calling.
It's not. Right. I was like, okay, then what is it? What am I supposed to do? And so that's when I signed that sacred contract, right? Okay. I'm going to walk in my purpose. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. So guide me in that. And once you sign that contract, it's just like asking for patience. You can't renege on that. Once you say, I will, I do, you committed.
Oh my goodness. I literally just made a contract Monday. Made a contract to myself Monday, right? That's an accountability contract. There's certain, as you said, there's certain goals and stuff that we want to achieve. And sometimes we do get thrown off. Even though you have friends, family that will hold you accountable, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, I'm going to check in on you. Oh, hey, you did that. Okay, cool. In my contract, I put my goals. I have consequences that I don't want to pay. Those are my taxes that I don't want to pay. And then not only that, I also put the rewarding part. If I achieve goal number one, okay, cool. I didn't do this. Now I have to pay my fee. And if I do achieve goal number one, not if I do, when I achieve goal number one, the first rewarding thing is I'll be able to take my family on a vacation. That's something that is like, oh, okay, cool. My wife saw it. She was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And it's just one of the things that I've learned over time. Sometimes we get distracted by just life in general or our own goals and ambitions. Hey, I'm going to do this. Oh, actually, I'm going to go do that. Actually, I'm going to go do this. And you lose track of what you really wanted. You're just doing it because it's the new thing right now. Or you're doing it because someone suggests, hey, if you do this, hey, you can make $20 right away. And it's just, oh, I want to make money, but my heart really don't desire that. Well, this is fun, but I don't really desire that. This one right here, I desire. So let me actually lock in and focus on that. And that is,
that's dope because I was like, man, people probably think I'm insane, but it's an accountability contract for my goals. And every month, at the end of the month, I will have a meeting with myself and figure out what areas do I have to improve in. I mean, I didn't get to goal number one. Am I actually putting the time and dedication to it? Or am I actually doing it? Or if I'm thinking I'm doing it, it's a difference, right?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
But, you know, hey, I think I'm doing work, but then you look at your goals and you're like, man, the action's saying I'm not. Well, yeah, so I love how you actually had that contract as well. Along with that contract, once you signed it, what did that look like for you? You're like, okay, look, I'm listening to you. I'm not going down this path anymore. Was it right away you took off? Was it some doubt in there?
Of course. Since high school, I was supposed to, that's the path. That was what I was supposed to do. I went to a magnet school that focused on, now they call it STEM, but it was engineering and all that stuff. And it just, I had to change the mindset because you're an engineering student. You don't, it's not like being a psychologist. You know, I'm talking about feelings. You got theorems and formulas. You prove them. You do your
data says this.
That's it. Mm-hmm. The math is math. The rules are the rules. You ain't got to think about it. There's no emotional nothing built into that. You ain't got to be creative. None of that. And so when that's where your mind is and that's what you're thinking, that's how you operate. It takes a little minute to go from a science-based study to a little liberal arts school. I went from the University of Central Florida engineering program to a little liberal arts school where you sit in a circle and you talk about what you, how you feel about what we read versus what do you think about what we read. You know what I mean? It's a huge difference. And then you're expected to engage in conversations and the whole warm and fuzzy transformative education. So it was like,
so just as awkward.
It was literally taking a duck out of water. And so it was a huge shift, but it took a little bit. It took a little bit to get there, to get used to the idea.
Now, along this way, did you ever think about seeking therapy or talking about mental health? Because I know, but I want to say I know, one would imagine mentally, this is system overload. Mm-hmm. Because you're looking at, okay, normally the math is math right here. Math ain't math. We express it. And I feel comfortable with this because I'm so used to being the STEM student that's excelling, that's going by the numbers. So did you ever think about seeking, I like to say, a pro to help you mentally along this journey? Or was this all self?
All self. Because the way I grew up, a therapist was somebody you saw on TV, and they were usually did not look like us. Nope. You had therapists, middle-aged white man sitting in a chair, and across from him, his client was some middle-class person who paid $150 an hour. First of all, you thought it was something else to do with that $150. Yeah. Like, therapy was not the thing. If anything,
we're going to go to church.
Or you go to the club. Yeah. There was somewhere
else. There's other ways to express yourself for therapy.
To go to, like, getting that released. So, no, consider it never crossed my mind to go to
likewise. You know what my problem was, right?
My problem was, even when I thought about it, I always thought about the conversations in my house. What happens in this house stays in this house.
Sure. Sure, you don't tell your business.
You don't tell your business? No. And so I was scared of that. And then very similar to what you just mentioned as far as, yo, my therapy, we're going to the club. Your boy was like, Mr. Anything Possible.
Exactly. And
that was my way to express myself. Now that I look at it, I'm like, man, maybe I should have blocked out the noise and either seek a life coach or seek a therapist that I can afford, because it does get pricey. When you look at a therapist, you're like, oh man, this guy's going to be intimidating, or she may be intimidating, or they may be intimidating. They're going to judge me. Mm-hmm. And then I had to take a step back and realize, you know what? They're not going to judge me. They're going to actually help me look in that mirror and tell me what I'm really seeing. Mm-hmm. And they're going to tell me in a way that I may not want to hear, but I need to hear in order to grow. I think that was something I learned over the years. Now I'm thrilled to say that I actually have friends as therapists. Mm-hmm. My buddies are like, hey, I'm looking for a therapist. Can you connect me? I'm like, you ain't gonna jeopardize my friendship. But I will sit down with you and we can look around and how to tell who's a good therapist. So I was like, I don't need you to, I want to be the bridge and I want to keep that good relationship. Right. Okay. But as I digress, so that moment for you during this, doing the self, what was one of the first steps for you speaking out loud and talking to yourself? Was there any, I should say second step. What was the second step for you to really help you get a little sturdy?
I think it was just the whole journey from undergrad into grad school. It was just, I felt like I was being spoon-fed little bits of, you know, what I needed and what I could handle. So it started with going to this learning institution that focused on transformative education and being productive stewards in out in the world and creating, because it was basically environmental studies and urban planning, and creating beautiful spaces for people to find solace and peace. So we studied people like Henry Thoreau and Frederick Law Olmsted, and these were transcendentalists who believed in the healing power of the environment. That's why Central Park is in New York City, because they believed that needed to happen for people. They needed a place to go and just be with nature, to get away from the concrete jungle. And it was during that time in undergrad where we would write these papers and you were speaking to these different philosophies and really getting into what it is like to experience nature and how that does benefit a person's sense of well-being. And so I found my voice in my writing, which was the first creative form of expression that Spirit allowed me to see that I am very powerful in. I'm powerful in what I write and the words that I use and how I convey my thoughts as in the written word. So I think it grew from there and sharing in those discussion circles, which prepared me for grad school, because again, it was talking about what you felt and getting in touch with, connecting with your intuition and doing those creative experiential exercises. So I think it was just bit by bit, Spirit showing me that we are all innately creative. And you can find your way in the ways that you're creative, because they're unique. Everybody's creative in their own unique way. So I think it was just being, as I went through that, my studies, it was just being spoon-fed to me as I was growing.
I love how you mentioned journaling is something that I do as well. Having young kids, it's like I have to sit down and write. I really have time for that nowadays. But I started using it, my phone, voice notes.
Mm.
Right. And I found that so beneficial as far as being able to express myself, but now I can play it back as a replay. Now I can not only express myself, I can hear the pain, the hurt, the joy when I was feeling. And most of the time that night, I talk about how good my day is, right? Just okay. It was whatever experience I had, right? So I was like, oh man, today, this was my experience. It wasn't a bad day. It wasn't a negative experience or a positive. It's just experience. We take it however we can take it. And I listen to it. After I say it, I listen to it. That'd be like my own podcast. But then when I wake up, I express the gratitude. Hey, you know what? I'm thankful to wake up. I'm thankful to have a loving family. I'm thankful to change lives. Not in the sense of an egotistic, but I'm thankful to have a story to tell. Able to teach people not only about like suicide, but mental health as far as, hey, before we even get to suicide, let's prevent all of that. Let's actually address this. And then just being able to do that, I find that so beneficial for me as man, this positive thing. So when those moments I do have that negative experience, I'm just like, oh man, this is too much. I'll go back to, hey, I said something amazing that Thursday morning. Let me replay it now. Because even though I'm angry, I'm upset, I'm pissed off or whatever, I can listen to that guy that woke up and said, hey, you're amazing, you're smart, you're blessed, your kids love you. Granted, they yell at you, but they love you. Granted, your wife is mad at you, but she loves you. And really be able to sit there and check me. Sometimes we have to check ourselves as well. And our ego start talking, oh, God, I should do this. I need this. And it was like, let me humble myself. So I use that as my humbling experience. So after grad school, after just school in general, of you learning about feeling, and not only learning about feelings, but learning about techniques that can help others heal, as far as writing, cooking, coloring, which all of this I enjoy doing. What was it? When did you realize, okay, I'm good, I'm healed enough to take on, I'm healed enough to shine my light and show this person the path of, hey, that trauma that you experienced now, follow me. I'll be your light. Because I experienced those emotions. So what was that like for you? Was
it a three-year process of you being comfortable not only sharing your stories, but being able to be that light for others?
I think it was more of, for me, because I did research. I did some research and worked with individuals, worked with women who were experiencing different life transitions, and they were all older than me. They were all baby boomer. So 1946 to 1964, they were born. And working with them, so you, in working with that demographic, you're not in a position necessarily to be like, let me shine this light for the other. Follow me. I got this. I got
to. Listen, you got to throw. You will follow me.
I got to.
Yeah.
So it was more, teach me. You've experienced it, or you're going through it, or you're expecting to go through this. Share your story with me and teach me. So it was really, the image that I always saw was like sitting around a fire with these women, and they're sitting up on these big rocks or logs or whatever, and I'm on the ground and I'm listening like a child, listening to their elders in the tribe and learning. That's what it was for me. So what I offered them was companion. That's where Crossroad Companion comes in. I don't know what's ahead. I don't know what's ahead for anybody's story, regardless of their age. I don't know. Everybody's path is different. So I'm not going to say, I know, but I'll stand beside you and I'll hold the light and we'll get through it together. We'll figure it out together. And I'm here for the duration. Because sometimes that's what you need. Like for me, when I was going through, I didn't need someone to give me advice. I didn't need someone to tell me that it was going to be okay. I needed someone just to be there. I didn't even need you to understand. You don't even got to understand what I'm going through. Just be with me, hold space for me, and walk with me. Just like what Jesus would do, right? He would walk with you. He didn't really need, Jesus didn't really have to say anything. Because he just was that, he was God. That was all he was spirit,
yeah.
Pure through and through. And you were healed just in his presence, practically, right? That was pretty much enough. And not that I'm Jesus.
Just want to quickly
clear that up. I'm not Jesus. But I am of God. And we each have the ability to heal.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it is just our presence that we can offer that does ease somebody's soul when they're going through. And that's what I offer.
So it was one of those, well,
first of all, shout out to that community, because it took a community to help you understand this journey.
It'd probably help you understand you at all. Oh, okay, cool. I can be a leader to help those that need, but I find it easier, and not even easier, I find it more beneficial to be right there and hold your hand instead of leading the way. No, we're going to figure this out together. So you may lead during this stage. I'm going to lead during this stage, but together we're going to get to the end goal, and that's for you to be at peace. So that is amazing. And for myself, I do a lot of support groups, right? And in the support groups, I lead them, right? And I lead it in a very different way. A lot of people are like, oh man, like most support groups, they tell you when someone's talking, right? Dude, I get it. I'm like, we are all have some experience that I don't know what you've been through. You don't know what I've been through. Something you may have been through. Oh, you know what? I tried that. That didn't work. But you may have a phenomenal suggestion. Oh, hey, I actually did this and this helped me out. I want to have a dialogue. And that's how I treat it, as a dialogue. Because I feel like in that, we all get to learn together. We all get to, hey, we all have one. And if I do get out of control, that's when I do shut things down. But as far as that, like that type of, for me, works. And that's why like a lot of my clients, hey,
we love the way you
do the groups, because you lead, but you listen as well. You let us express ourselves. That's how together we can break a stigma. I'm learning like, okay, this worked for you. Oh, actually, I did seek a therapist. I tried this. You know what? I didn't get a therapist. I actually got someone who was more of a life coach. And then it worked for me because they experienced it. They had that life, that lived experience. And they actually show techniques, right? I had someone who I met, they was like, they did music therapy, right? And he's like, I was going through so much trauma and all this, and I couldn't focus. But when he got on that guitar, all those emotions and feelings, he was able to release.
Yeah.
He was able to release. He's like, I'm not gonna lie, like, and you get it. I hit that tune and tears start coming out. Because not only is he learning how to play the guitar, but while he was working with someone who was going through the experience and, hey, how do you feel? Okay, play this note, play that note. And then when they got to a certain note, couldn't go past it because, okay, this is the area that we need to learn about. So I think that is also something that's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like showing people, like, hey, yeah, you can go seek a therapist, you can go seek a social worker and so on, the pros, as I like to say. But there are people out there that have lived experience that is as skilled as the pros. So give it a try. So I think that was very beneficial as well. So that was, yeah, that was good. So this is a new segment that I just started.
Okay.
And the segment is called Beyond the Stigma. So I'm going to ask you 5 questions.
Okay.
All right. No, Jesse. All right.
Are these like the rapid fire questions? Say the first thing that comes to mind.
No, I want you to, I want you to be you.
Okay.
So if you take 16 minutes on one, I'm going to reel it back, okay?
I'll try to beat it up.
No, but it's just something that, you know, I maybe the listener, even more so, would like to know. And maybe there's something that you probably didn't acknowledge and thought about.
Okay.
So, these questions, here we go. Question number one. What's the best advice you ever received about mental health?
The best advice I ever received about mental health. It wasn't something someone said directly as much as what I observed. Does that count?
Okay.
So what I observe is that mental health applies to everyone. But you, as a person of color, who that was not culturally or subculturally our go-to, you didn't really think about mental health a thing in our community. Like you had the people who they called low, or they used the R word, which we don't use anymore, or they might have been crazy or touched, the old folks would say. But there wasn't really, that was not at the forefront subculturally. And I say subculture because we have our culture as the United States of America. Yeah. And then within that, with your different ethnicities, you have your subculture. It wasn't until I went to that little liberal arts school and I noticed just how many of my counterparts were in therapy. And it was a norm for them. It was like going to the dentist. It was just something that they had been doing since they were like 12 years old. And it was like, okay, so does that mean you're crazy?
Yeah.
Like, we're going on with you, because typically people who go see therapists, they've got, you know, mental health issues.
Yeah.
But I had to learn that it was, for them, that was part of caring. That was part of their health care, their routine. There was the health care. It's like going to the dentist or going to your primary care physician. You go to your therapist. It wasn't something that you necessarily had to be in crisis to have to do. So I think it was realizing that you don't have to be crazy to see a therapist.
Just the maintenance.
Yeah, it was a maintenance thing. And it wasn't until I had conversations with my counterparts that became apparent. So yeah, it wasn't something that someone said directly. It was a learning.
I like that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. All right. What was your most heartwarming moment with a client? Or a patient?
I call them client. Okay. Oh, man. There have been so many. Gosh, there's one that comes to mind that was very recent. We talked about, it was not a good session unless somebody's crying.
That's when
You know.
One of us go cry.
That's when I know I done my job. If you're crying, I did my job. But it was a breakthrough that one of my clients, they all have breakthroughs. But this client had a breakthrough that was unexpected. She connected with some stuff she hadn't thought that needed to be connected to. It was just kind of stuff. And it's not really, it's there, but it's not there. And so the process that we went through, she had a breakthrough and she cried. And she said that that's not something that she did. She's not a crier. She would have to make herself cry to cry. But she cried. And she connected with a part of herself that needed love and attention and nurturing. And just to see her go through that, to have that breakthrough, because we heal ourselves. We just need somebody there to help us get there.
That encouragement.
Yeah, help us get there. I think that was one of the most powerful sessions I've had with a client.
All right. How can we create a more loving and supportive community regarding mental health?
I think you touched on something earlier that was extremely powerful. I don't feel like we can effectively change our community or better our community until we are able to forgive ourselves. Like you hit on that. People are going to hear this and be like, that don't make no sense. But
no, it does.
If you think about it, it's like when people tell you can't love somebody else until you can love yourself. Forgiving yourself, believing in those limiting beliefs, forgiving yourself for buying into someone calling you stupid, or someone saying you're not good enough, or someone saying you're not pretty enough, or someone saying that you'll never amount to anything. Forgiving yourself for believing that is essentially the same as forgiving someone else. Because I believe that we're all one. And if you think about it, it makes sense. What do we do with what we're feeling on the inside? If we hate ourselves, what do we do with that? We project that.
Mm-hmm. So treating others in a negative way.
Because you're relating it directly to who you are. You think somebody's cheating on you because that's what you're doing.
Oh, you're thinking about cheating.
And so it makes sense that the right mind thing, which is forgiving yourself, loving yourself, it makes sense that it works the same way. If you can do that for you, if you believe yourself to be beautiful, if you believe yourself to be smart, if you believe yourself to be whole and complete and not lacking, then you're going to give that, you're going to see that in someone else. And until you can see that in you so that you can see that in someone else, you can't change anything. It has to start. So if you do it for you, you forgive you. And by you forgiving you, you're forgiving me because you're looking at me through loving eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've forgiven myself and I'm looking to that person through loving eyes. And so they're able to look at me.
That's the way to.
And so if we as a community are able to do that, then we fix it. It's done. It's done.
I like that. I love that answer.
Cool.
I don't even know if I should ask this because I feel like you just answered this. Here we are. Okay. What is the biggest challenges facing mental health today and how can we overcome it? I think you just answered that. You answered 3 and 4, but just like really going with that and learning about it. But also I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what you said about your first answer and watching others going to therapy, like that's a thing. That is like, what? My fear was, man, if I go tell this person what I'm going or how I'm thinking, not only are they going to judge me, but the people in the white coats are going to come. Because that's every time I associate a therapist, I thought about white coats.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like my fear of, oh, I'm not going. Mm-hmm. The white coats are going to come. Mm-hmm. And if the white coats come, my neighbor, my friends.
Who's going to know?
Everybody will know.
I don't know.
Somebody going to know it.
And then,
in our community, the birds be chirping.
Yeah. And it was like, and then mom or auntie, somebody going to be like,
oh, you still enough? Are you okay now? You know. But as I digress, what is the biggest challenge facing mental health today? And how can we overcome it?
I think, let's see. Biggest thing is the word that comes to mind is mindset. There's so many things that impact our mental health, right down to your genetic coding, your what you eat. And there's so many layers to that so many issues that need to be addressed. Like our children need to have access to fruits, fresh fruits and vegetables and meats that aren't, their families need to be able to afford foods that aren't crud. for lack of a better word. But because that impacts their behavior.
Everything.
Well, it impacts how they're able to retain information.
In certain areas, I'm so happy that you touched on this. I want to add to your value. In certain areas, depending on where you live,
you'll see more McDonald's than supermarkets.
Right.
And if you have that supermarket, it may not be the best supermarket. Mm-hmm. It may not have all the organic foods that you may need. Mm-hmm. Right. And man, I feel like this is about to be a whole different podcast after this. But it's also, as you said, the mindset, the access to certain things that you need, right?
And
maybe you don't have the access not only to the food, but to the actual right people that can support you. And they may have the social worker who get the idea of what you're going through, but they haven't really experienced that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how can we do this? It's like really try to create. And this is why, honestly, I started doing this. It was like, I want people that look like us
mm-hmm.
to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, look, I went through this. I'm cool. I'm cool with sharing it. I'm cool. And hey, look, I'm thinking about looking for a therapist right now, mm-hmm. right? Not saying I'm going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs or anything
right,
like that.
Right.
But as you said earlier, the maintenance. I want to make sure mentally I'm as sharp as I can be so I can be that person I desire to be. So yeah, but this is...
I just want to get your answer on this because I was like, man, this is a loaded question, but
I feel like it's a question that needs to be addressed. And for you, just that one topic, you said mindset, that was the first thing. Can you please dive into that?
I think it's changing what therapy looks like. Remove the old white, like you were saying, remove the image that we have of what it looks like to go to therapy. And just understand that you don't have to be of a specific, have a certain socioeconomic background to take advantage of it. You can be the D-boy on the block and go to therapy.
Yeah.
And maybe you should be. Maybe you should be in therapy just to help you see or have somebody to confide in. Because really what we're doing, we have such brilliant minds in our community. And it's just a matter of having someone to connect with to say, even if it's just to say, there is more to you than what you believe there is. Because a therapist can do that for you. A therapist can help you see what you have not been able to see, but it's there, but you've not been able to see. So it's not about just you being crazy or depressed or bipolar. Like it doesn't have to be to that extreme. It can be someone that you just need to be able to talk to because you can't talk to your boys about it. You can't talk to your family about it. You ain't trying to go to the pastor to talk about it because that's a neutral party that you can talk to and take advantage of that so they can build you up. Think of it as, that's the mindset. Think of it as someone, it is a self-care that builds you up to help you have that shift in perspective. And to provide you with resources.
Yeah, I love that.
I think it does come down to the mindset and speaking their language. In our community, we got to give this to them in a language that they can get with.
I say that a lot, right? And people, I feel like they probably think I'm just saying it to say it, but when we talk about language, it doesn't necessarily have to be like French, Spanish, or anything.
No.
It's a language that, for example, you and I, we could talk a certain language, right? A certain lingo, a certain way we talk about things. If I talk about, I don't know if you ever watched Living Single,
imagine something
like, man, my girl always got way with Regine.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be like, oh, okay, he's talking about Living Single. Oh, she's always like that. There's certain codes, certain things that we watch, certain things that we experience mm-hmm. that we get, mm-hmm. right? Right now, one of the most like entertaining shows is Power.
Right.
And like 50 Cent took it to a whole different level. And like my friends and I, we chat in that code. We chat in certain codes. We talk about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And some people would never heard of Power. They'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, man, yo, what are you talking about, the Wayans brothers? What are you talking about? Like, they don't get certain mm-hmm. things. I'm like, dude, you had to be there. Like, that's the only way I could say it.
Sorry.
And but learning to find that person that speaks your language.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes, and even for myself, like, I'm an advocate for finding that person that speaks your language, but then I'm also an advocate of getting uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And some people are like, oh, well, that's like code switching. No, it's not code switching. I feel like there's more to me, mm-hmm. but I'm so comfortable and I'm in this pocket that like, hey, we get it, we laugh, and we talk about joy, we talk about all that. Let me get into a different pocket where someone can challenge me. I've never been challenged that way before, how they see life, how they view things. Yeah, I love that you mentioned that.
And even in bringing awareness to, not before they even find that therapist person, like making that billboard or post or whatever it is, it's got to be able to our community. And like, they've got to be able to read them, like, okay, I think I can work with this. Okay, that I can connect with that. Because the word therapist is just in our community, I don't think that's a word that people are going to be able to really get with. So it is just a matter of bringing it to our community in a way that they can relate. We can relate to it,
yeah,
and want to and see the value in it. They can relate to it and see the value for them in it. Like, how do you present this to the D boy on the block?
Yeah,
what is the language? What do you got to say? Be like, bro, you might wanna.
Yeah, you might want to holler at me. Yeah, let's come to the back. Yeah. Tell me what you're going through, dog.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, how do you present that to him so that he's intrigued and all right, maybe I want to know more.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I actually listened to this artist, too. Oh, yeah, I did listen to Lil Wayne.
Yeah, so it's like, how do you get them to want to engage in a therapeutic type situation scenario?
You are setting me up perfectly.
Yeah, we're going to segue to number five.
How have social media impacted how we discuss and understand mental health?
They just put it all out there. Social media, it's you getting access to everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
For myself, it wasn't until COVID, right? When we was all locked down. Mm. When we was all locked down, people that didn't discuss mental health was actually talking about it on social media. As I started sharing my story on social media, they was like, oh man, hey, I didn't know that. I was experiencing that too. And then that started connecting the pros, the therapists, the counselors, the psychotherapists, they started DMing me. We having conversations. I'm like, let's have a discussion. Let's go all live. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I never did it. Let's do it. And that conversation helped, right? Mm. Now, granted, some of the therapists that I was talking to, they didn't look like me. They didn't sound like me. But that was my objective to see, one, I'm going to show up how I show up. And two, the people that's following me, they get to see kind of real life therapy session, but they get to see how it looked. Oh, hey, everything code switch, quote unquote, at all. I still said my regular lingo and still presented that. And I found that so much beneficial because not only people that knew me for like 10 years, I had one of my friends that like I've been knowing forever that was like, hey, I've been struggling mentally. But that conversation you had with that therapist, hey, I'm thinking about it now. Because, man, I want to go outside, but I can't go outside. We got this all locked down and all this stuff that came from my past is just showing up on the front door like, hey, you know what you got? And I need to address it. I think social media, for my answer, is to really just present it to very similar to what you said in a way where they can digest. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a black thing, a white thing. Mm-hmm. It's a human thing.
Yeah.
As you said earlier, it doesn't discriminate. Does it, hey, you got some trauma that you experienced, some baggage that you carry, and you trying to figure out why can't you fly like that superhero that you are? Because something weighing you down, that's what you have to go seek, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a therapist, but it can be someone, a woman of your skills, right? You may sit there and touch them in a way where they're like, man, hold on. Hey, now all of a sudden I was writing, now I'm writing poems, now I'm writing raps, or I'm writing a song, now I'm expressing myself. In a way where it's, man, I'm letting that hurt go, and now I feel like me. Now I feel like I got my power back. I love that. But that was my answer. I want to know yours. If you're probably wrapped yourself, I was like,
I agree with what you said. That was the one good thing that came from COVID is that people, when you're sitting at home and you're not interacting with people, things start happening. You're locked up and. And maybe you and the kids, maybe you, the kids, and the spouse, and you see just how real it is.
Yeah.
When you can't get away. When you don't have those social outlets.
Can't go to the bar. I can't have a drink. I can't do any of that. And it's just, man, now all of a sudden I'm thinking about something when I was 11 years old.
What?
And this is nonsense. So I think normalizing those conversations on social media. And it doesn't necessarily have to be you talking about your trauma out loud in public, but it could be you just taking information and, oh, man, oh, this person did that? Okay. They're talking about exercising 15 minutes a day? I ain't got enough time. Let me bust out some push-ups. Let me go around the block. Let me get my 15 minutes of sun. Hey, look, I never did this before. Let me go hug a tree. Yeah, I never did this before. Let me go actually talk to myself in the mirror. Talk about those positive affirmations. Get this self-doubt that's in the back of my mind creeping up to me. Let me actually get rid of that. So I think that's good. But before we go, please tell people how to find you.
You can find me at The, that's where I am. And I'm also on Instagram as The Crossroad Companion.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Just Believe Show. Together, we can raise mental health awareness and prevent suicide one step at a time. If you're currently struggling, you're not alone. I provided some resources in the show notes, so check them out. To learn more about my mission, or if you want to inquire me at Job Becoming a Vet, please visit herbiemack.com. Stay connected with me on social media. It's in the show notes. You get a glimpse behind the scene content, some uplifting content as well, and ways to support your well-being. Always stay true to yourself. Embrace the power of hope. Remember, you can make a positive impact. That being said, take care, stay strong, peace.